Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with something, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, and join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Has been thrown into turmoil by the damning verdict of Lord Hutton on its editorial standards, its management, and its board of governors.
For Xabi Alonso, what a goal for Liverpool! What a move for Liverpool!
The Hutton report into the death of the weapons expert, Dr. David Kelly, cleared Mr. Blair and the government of any blame.
Pires for Vieira! Arsenal have put it together when it mattered.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Greatest Games on Football Ramble Daily in association with the Blizzard. Good to have you here. My name's Marcus Speller. Jonathan Wilson is with me. And with us, we have Vitushan Ihantaraja today, sports feature writer for The Independent and all-round good egg, may I say. It's good to have you here, Vish.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Out of 10, how would you rate that pronunciation of your name?
You know what? That was a solid 8, actually.
Really?
I think the worst thing people do is when they just don't bother with it at all. And they just and we're here with Vish.
Well, to be fair, I got Vish in quite early.
Yes.
I want to establish that that's how you introduced yourself earlier. So, today's game, Vish, we're going back to November 2004. Liverpool 2, Arsenal 1 in the Premier League in that 2004-2005 season. Of course, it was Arsenal were the holders. They were the Invincibles the previous season. Liverpool under Benitez. Of course, why have you chosen this game?
I suppose for purely selfish reasons. I know that it's, you know, someone who listens to the podcast and having seen the games that you've done, they've actually, you know, been quite, well, been a game that's affected, I suppose, a particular team's cycle or been at the end of a team's cycle or kind of really changed the face of football. And mine is just purely for nostalgic reasons. It was my first year of uni and I think this is the first game of football between two teams I didn't support. I'm a Manchester United fan.
So when you said selfish reasons, I thought to myself, well, you're not that selfish because you could have gone for a Manchester United game and you would have had a pick of quite a few fond memories, no doubt.
Yeah, but...
And you've gone for a Liverpool win, so very unselfish. I think you'd be a bit harsh on yourself.
Yeah, so there was something about this game because I remember watching it at the time and I think it was a kind of a light bulb went off in my head and I think it was the first time that I was able to appreciate, I suppose, how fun football was and also the intricacies. So I still regard this game as one of the best Premier League games that has taken place because it combined both the, you know, the speed and the freneticism of the Premier League, which we love so much. But it also seemed to mark something in my head of, it was almost the moment that English teams, and I appreciate there are a lot of foreign players in this particular game and in the Premier League in general, but it's the first time that English teams were able to combine that freneticism with technical brilliance. And I think it's evidenced by all three goals in this game were just marvellous pieces of football and different kinds of football as well in their own different way.
Yeah, totally different goal. Three great goals in the game, you're absolutely
right. I think
right.
That's an interesting point you make about the diffusion of sort of the technical ability with the pace of the English game. Because is this season, however freakish Liverpool's success in the Champions League ultimately was, it was the beginning of that little... You know, actually quite brief, probably too brief, golden age of English football when English teams were the best in Europe and were dominating the Champions League, which only really went on, I mean, until Barcelona came along, I suppose, was what ended that. I think you're right, it is this season when that fusion first begins.
Yeah. And so Arsenal, as I say, they were the Invincibles side. They'd only, I think, won 1-8 in all competitions going into the game. You know, they weren't in good shakes.
Well, they'd lost that record, the 49 game unbeaten record to
Manchester United.
That they did,
This just makes me feel really old, because I was at this game, I was at the game when United beat them, and the idea that you were still at university is frankly sickening.
I wasn't even at university.
I was a veteran by the time I was doing this.
Well, it was Edinburgh University as well, which is obviously Marcus's old stomping ground. Edinburgh the city, so just about recovered from Marcus. Then I went there. He was just building
yourself
back up.
I noticed you're both wearing hearts maroon.
We are as well, indeed, yeah. I hope you didn't vandalise the statue of me when you were up there, but, or helped erect it perhaps. But yes, Arsenal, they were the team to beat because they were the champions. Or were they though? Because, of course, Jose Mourinho had joined the league at this point under Chelsea, and at the time of this game they were top of the league, and Arsenal were lagging behind a little bit.
Well, I mean, Arsenal were, as you say, they'd won one of the previous eight. They'd drawn the last two games against West Brom and PSV. So they, although they clearly were still an excellent side, they were in a in a wobble. And I looked up the, I should have looked up my own match report, actually. I don't know what I said about this, but I looked up the Guardian's match report, and Kevin McCarra's intro is all about all good things come to an end. Arsenal have finished.
Yep.
And the handover of the Premier League title will probably come when Chelsea go to Highbury, which I think was then, this game was in towards the end of November, and I think it was about 2 weeks later that the Chelsea went to Arsenal. Mm-hmm. And I think then won that to go 9 points clear or something. So very, very quickly, Mourinho's affected, Mourinho's changes, his personality had taken effect, and Chelsea were very obviously in the box seat.
Well, according to that article by Kevin McCarra, there's a line that says this might have been merely their second defeat in 55 Premiership outings, but they'd only mustered 6 points from five league fixtures since being beaten by Manchester United. And it's funny, isn't it? Because, we will go on to talk about the game in a bit, but it wasn't an Arsenal side that were firing on all cylinders yet. When you look at the fact that they'd only lost two, that was their second loss in 55 league games, it's quite extraordinary, Vish, that what that side achieved. And yet,
I'm going to probably have a bit of a go at them when we start talking about the game.
Yeah, when you look back at how they started the season, they were almost quite ill-disciplined as well. You mentioned that PSV game where they drew. They were down to 9 men for the last 15 minutes.
Yeah, it was a lot of red. This was a period when Wenger's side was getting a lot of red cards. Mm. It seems weird, like, having also lived through late period Wenger when they were incredibly insipid.
Yeah.
The thing that, you know, they were famous for two things at this period, which was brilliant counter-attacking and hundreds of red cards.
Yep. Yeah, you can forget that. The I don't know, what would you call it, the evolution or the complete gear change that Wenger did when he was at Arsenal. As you say, they had proper hatchet men in there, you know, guys who would get stuck in. And in a hard man way, yes, but also in a really spiteful way sometimes as well.
Fabregas is a sort of, spite is the word. Nasty edge to Fabregas. It's a wonderful player that he is.
And obviously Vieira would, you know, every now and again he'd just really just leave his boot in and things like that. I think one of the things I found most interesting about that Arsenal team was how they would match up to Manchester United at the time, and they really did a number on Manchester United the previous season. Obviously, with what happened with Van Nistelrooy and Keown at Old Trafford the season before, but because of the way they played, they almost got to a stage at the end of that season where they were just ignoring United, and I think you could tell that annoyed Ferguson a lot because, you know, he didn't really know what to do because suddenly Wenger didn't have to, you know, get in and have a scrap with him. He could just go about his business and, you know, he could finish unbeaten. So when Mourinho came, I think Wenger suddenly thought, well, I've just got rid of one.
Yeah, right.
Who's this other, can we say prick on this show?
Of course you can. Yeah, you can say what you want.
Nobody listens, it's fine.
But at least not Jose.
But so then when they started the season that badly, I wondered if it was because, obviously Chelsea started pretty steadily, but were, you know, obviously winning games, they were top of the league. And I think maybe as a team, they kind of thought, come on, what is this? How has this team come out of nowhere? We've earned the right to be here. Mm. And suddenly you're here.
I think as well, you know, the nature of that invincible season, yeah, they only got 90 points, is that right?
They drew 12 games.
So they drew 12 games.
126 drew 12.
So there's a lot of draws in there. And I think it was sort of a real debilitating, the pressure was debilitating towards the end of the season. Yeah. Not just winning the title, but doing this completely unprecedented since Preston way back in 1887-8.
Just specify.
And I think, yeah, anything like that where you've been under constant pressure for, yeah, 2-3 months, it's very, very hard then when one thing goes wrong to pick yourself up and go again. And, you know, in the end, this season really for Arsenal is saved by a pretty unpleasant FA Cup final when they do beat United again, but in a just a horrible game.
Do you think if they'd lost a game in that invincible season, obviously it wouldn't be an invincible season, but do you think it would have got the monkey off their back early enough so that they could actually focus properly on the season that we're in 04-05?
I don't know. It's also
because they did lose to Chelsea in the Champions League that invincible season.
Well, see, I think that game...
Yeah.
It's a game you should have chosen.
that was the Wayne Bridge one.
Wayne Bridge got the winner at Highbury.
That, I think, is a really significant game in the evolution of English football. That's the end of Arsenal, although they kind of go on.
I completely agree.
That's when that flips.
I agree.
And obviously Mourinho coming in, it was necessary for Chelsea to be elevated. But that game is really where the seesaw
absolutely
tips. I don't know. I mean, it's sort of, what would you rather do? Would you rather go unbeaten and have a season that everybody remembers that has a very kind of obvious nickname? Or would you rather do well the next season as well? And I don't know. I almost think...
Well, I think the way it's gone, I think you... I mean, I'm not an Arsenal fan, but I would guess that actually, yeah, you had that invincible year, but they've been nowhere near since.
Yeah, but the invincible year will always be there, will always be talked about, will always be remembered.
But you, think
you could just win a title and win another title, and they kind of, yeah, after a while, they sort of... Get anybody who's not a United fan... sort of separate out United starters in the 90s and early 2000s. Mm. They just sort of all blur together. And I don't know. I think either is, you know, there's a right or wrong answer here. But for me personally, and maybe this is coming from a support of a team who have not been successful for quite some time. Although we were a long time ago.
You're talking about Sunderland, are you?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to have to take your word for that, but go on.
Yeah, Sunderland starters in the 1890s, they blur together.
On the parchment paper that they're in.
Or would you rather have the sort of the the really memorable, unique one? I don't know.
I felt like at the start of that season, when they came up to that United game, because everyone was talking about, oh, can they go 50 games unbeaten? I think the players were a bit over that, because I think players generally think in cycles of seasons. So one season's done, that's fine. We're not going to focus on whether we've
been... Yeah, you might be right about that. I mean, I just remember when Spain, when they lost in the semi-final of the Confederations Cup to the US in 2009, and I can't remember exactly, but they'd gone 35 games unbeaten or something. Mm-hmm. And I talked to Pepe Reina after that, and the first thing he said was, "Oh, thank God that's over. We couldn't have gone into the World Cup with that." And part of you thinks,
he was the cheerleader at that side, you know.
He also played in that game.
Yeah.
Part of you thinks, oh, yeah, I do get that everybody's talking about this world record run, and maybe it is good to just be able to focus on the tournament itself.
Yeah.
It's also the obvious thing you say when you just lost surprisingly to the US, of kind of, well, here's the positive we're taking this because we don't really care about the Confederations.
But I do think there is something that in the media, if every time it's being asked of you, you can approach games. I mean, Arsenal, as I say, they drew 12 games that season. You just think, okay, well, let's not lose. And actually, you know, we'll go on to this game, but this is when you started seeing Arsenal, despite having Henry up front, despite having some great attacking players like Perez, they weren't as sharp for my money. They were a little bit sort of blunted.
Despite being an incredibly quick team, you know, Henry and Reyes and Perez and Ljungberg.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. But Liverpool themselves, I mean, they had, you know, they would go on to win the Champions League, incredibly, of course. They, at that time, though, they did have ambitions of the title and so on. Obviously, it didn't happen. They had a good squad of players, and Gerrard came back from injury. But, you know, that Xabi Alonso in there, immediately when you see his name and you see him in a Liverpool shirt. I'm not a Liverpool fan, but I know Liverpool fan that he is dearly loved at Anfield for the way he played when he was there.
Yeah, I mean, that midfield for this game of Harman, Alonso and Gerrard. Gerrard, when he was not just, I suppose, the passer from range and playing that quarterback role every now and again, but he was a dribbler at this point.
Yeah, that's right.
You know,
yeah.
He would happily ghost past players, ghost in the box, almost Hazard-like from the left.
And actually, you know, we'll obviously get into talk about the game in more detail in the second half, but he should have had a penalty early on.
Yes.
With one of those in the box, and Toure clips his knee. Very hard for a referee to see that, but you see the replay and it's obvious that Toure studs just clip his knee and take him down. And that is exactly that kind of burst you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. It's terrible. When I rewatched the highlights and saw that again, I thought, that's a penalty on VAR.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
That upstairs,
or maybe not, because who can tell?
Yeah. Probably loads of offsides in there as well.
Yeah, we can agree that the decision, whatever it would have been, would have taken a lot longer to come to. Which is, of course, what the case is now.
But the point about Liverpool, you know, they, although you can see the team, Benitez's team starting to come together, they were eighth in the table going into this game. They just lost the previous two against Middlesbrough and Monaco. And Monaco had been in the Champions League final the previous season. But still, you know, they were not in great form. It was still very much the early days of Benitez getting his team together. That midfield of Alonso, Herman and Gerrard just in front. I mean, it's the beginning of Gerrard not being, not being a box-to-box player, but of course he always was a box-to-box player, not being deployed as a box-to-box player, of the sort of midfield being separated into two bands. So rather than him being a sort of Brian Robson figure kind of bombing up and down, he's given sort of a more specific role high up the pitch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you think Liverpool were lucky to get Rafael Benitez? Because if you look at, I suppose, how he lost his job at Valencia, having achieved what he did at Valencia. Because I remember at the time, it was just common knowledge that he was going to go to Liverpool. Mm. Whereas when you look back on it, you're like, well, God, they've lucked out a bit there.
Yeah, well, maybe. But I mean, Liverpool's still Liverpool.
I was going to say,
it's 14 years after the last title. It's not the kind of eternity it is now. They were still, I mean, they
won trophies under Julio.
Yeah.
Even 5 years ago, before... 5 years before now, before Klopp arrived, it was still a very attractive proposition. Well, they're still a great team.
I think that's it. So sometimes people could forget in those periods, the quieter periods, that the pulling power that they still have as a club, and they always will do, is still very, very strong.
Yeah, and you also remember back then that unlike, you know, present day, where there's a dearth of really high-quality managers, there were loads of good managers about then who actually had those high-profile jobs, or at least were switching between top jobs every now and again. I suppose, like, where was Capello at this point? He would have been...
He was dreaming of England.
He would have been at Real Madrid.
Yeah, so you kind of... I suppose, yeah, maybe Benitez to Liverpool does fit quite neatly as a...
I mean, I know he was always an Anglophile. He obviously spoke English. I think, yeah, he... I mean, I can't remember specifically, but I assume that he'd let it be known pretty early that he quite fancied the idea of working in England. Although, I mean, maybe the Premier League wasn't quite as obviously an attractive proposition as it is now.
I don't know, but he'd won the Spanish title, of course, with not one of the big clubs.
Well, and he'd won the UEFA Cup the previous season in Gothenburg against Marseille.
So he thought to himself, you know, again, Liverpool hadn't won the title. I'll go there and I'll be the man to do it. Now, obviously, it didn't quite work out, but Champions League, it's not too shabby. All right, let's go for a quick break, and then after which we'll talk about the game itself. See you in a moment.
Well, I have to say, 1-0 Liverpool after 55 minutes, they felt shortchanged with less than the win.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Welcome back to Greatest Games, everybody. Now then, let's get down to the 90 minutes. Obviously, the game is at Anfield. Oh, yeah, one thing I forgot to say, it's interesting to see Chris Kirkland in goal for Liverpool.
Yeah.
You can forget, he was a very highly rated goalkeeper and obviously didn't quite work out for him at the very top level. Still had a very, very respectable career. But yeah, Chris was...
Well, they had a lot of problems with keepers, didn't they? They never quite were able to settle anybody. And obviously, they had Sander Westerveld, who had started to make a few errors.
Dudek would probably sort of
become the number one obviously by the end of the season.
So they'd
had difficulty. I'm trying to think who the last great keeper before. I mean, Dudek is a great keeper. I don't think he really
I mean, he would be remembered fondly for his heroics in the penalty shootout, of course.
Yeah,
but I wouldn't have called him a great goalkeeper.
There was definitely a lot of scepticism about him before that.
David James.
but that's
Peggy Alfixard.
Yeah, I know you're talking.
So yeah, they had really struggled to replace Grobbelaar, hadn't they?
Yeah, essentially, yeah. Yeah, they really had done. And Dudek was on the bench, of course. But Liverpool were without some of their main centre forwards. Of course, up front they had Cinema Pongol and a little lad called Neil Mellor.
Oh, Neil Mellor. It's quite sad, actually, seeing him on Sky Sports News doing the roundups at the grounds, because forget that he only retired at 29 and he still looks as young as he did when he played.
Yeah. Well, when you say sad, it's a good career.
It's a bit like seeing Dominic Cork doing transfer deadline day at Stoke City.
It is a little bit
What's going on?
Like, yeah. Oh, I'd love to see Neil Bellar at the cricket. Oh, that'd be great.
I bet he's good at cricket.
Yeah, probably. I mean, they all are, aren't they?
Yeah.
They just decided to do better things with their lives.
Yeah, well, arguably.
But yeah, Mellor up front, Cinnamon Pongol to the right, Harry Kewell to the left, and Gerrard sort of bursting forward through the middle from midfield.
Yeah.
And but, I mean, Cinnamon Pongol and Anton Letalic had come in together, hadn't they? They were
they're
two Ulier signings. Yeah. These are the French kids who are going to take us to a new level.
Mm. You had that. I mean, Neil Mellor's never scored in the Premier League, of course, before that day.
Pretty good way to start.
It wasn't a bad way to start, of course, and finish really in a way. But going into the game, yeah. So Liverpool. I mean, Harry Kewell was in there, of course. You know, Carragher at the back, and so on. And the Arsenal side was largely that.
It's the classic side, isn't it?
Yeah,
apart from Reyes, I guess. Is
Fabregas has sort of come in.
Yeah,
but I think Reyes was there for the invincible side, was he not? I can't remember now. But yeah, largely the team. But straight from the off, Liverpool were on the front foot, as you say. Gerrard should have had a penalty, he didn't. And really, Liverpool were providing the thrust and the attacking verve in this match. Arsenal weren't really offering that much going forward, Vish.
No, they looked a bit shell-shocked by Liverpool's energy when the game started. And they just lacked composure, didn't they? They often, you know, would control games and just build up and down. I think one of the great things about that Arsenal side was the way they managed the tempo of games. They wouldn't necessarily just go in waves and waves like, say, this current Liverpool side. They would just kind of pick their moments to...
Well, I think there's been a new...
really go at teams.
There's a new level of fitness. I think even sort of 15 years ago, players were not as fit as they are now, and you could press for maybe 70 minutes, but you couldn't press for 90. And now, all top sides can press for 90 minutes.
Wonder what that's down to. Weird. Someone should look into that.
careful.
They looked really rattled. And afterwards, Wenger would say that they were knackered from midweek for playing with nine men for as long as they did. And
away at PSV.
PSV. And you know, maybe there's a bit of truth in that, but. Yeah, Liverpool just looked so up for this game, and they, you know, they turned it into something tangible. They scored the first goal, didn't they?
And it's a lovely goal.
Oh, it's a beauty. Yeah, I mean, Gerrard there showing his sort of range of passing. You think of Gerrard playing sort of raking balls and all the rest of it, but that delightful slip
just
ball.
Waited so perfectly. It's a long, dangle from Steve Finnan, but Kewell knocks down, and then Gerrard just picks out the run of Xabi Alonso. Really good run from Neil Mellor as well to create the space.
Yeah, absolutely right, yeah.
Nice look with the outside of his foot as well, just with perfect amount of spin on it. It almost stops as Xabi Alonso comes onto it and side-foots it into a top corner, doesn't it?
It's,
you know, I suppose like Xabi Alonso now is, when you think back to him, you see him more as this kind of like conductor and, you know, just behind us. But to make that kind of run as well, obviously the space was there to run into, and he had Hamann next to him, who he knew would see if things went awry further forward. But that doesn't strike me as a, you'll tell me if I'm wrong here, but that didn't strike me as a particularly characteristic Xabi Alonso run.
No, I think that's probably fair. I think, you know, he definitely liked to sit. But at the same time, he did score goals, didn't he? He was one of those players who quite often scored quite unusual goals. I mean, the goal he got against, was it against Luton in the Cup when he scored from inside his own half?
Yeah.
Well, against Newcastle, did he not do the same thing?
Yes. Steve Harper falls over.
Yeah,
he
does help him a little bit, but still.
So I think he was somebody who, I think he had one of the most intelligent players we've seen in the Premier League. And so I think he probably just saw the space and realised that the opportunity was there.
Is there an argument? I mean, shoot me down here. It certainly wouldn't be the case with Liverpool fans, but do you think he's a touch underrated, Xabi Alonso? The only reason I say that, because you think it's Liverpool fans remember him very fondly at Liverpool, of course, as they should do. Some people can maybe forget, but when he played for Real Madrid, but then with Spain, people remember maybe one or two others playing for Spain. They forget sometimes that he was at the heart of that midfield often for them.
Probably in the same way that a lot of players of that type are underrated. That's, you know, he's unflashy. He doesn't score.
No, but
many
Pirlo
goals.
Wouldn't be. I know they're slightly different players.
I think Pirlo's monstrously overrated.
Yeah, okay, so there you go. No. But so there you are.
If you gave me a choice between peak Pirlo and peak Xabi Alonso, I'd take Xabi Alonso every day of the week.
No, I think I'd probably agree with you. But if you gave that option to a lot of others, they'd probably go for Pirlo.
I mean, you just can't trust people with democracy.
As the less said about that, the better, of course.
It's a bit of a wanky thing to say, maybe, but he was...
You are bringing the swear, aren't you? It's fun when you get kids on.
Yeah, I do apologise for that. But
don't apologise.
I feel like he was one of the first purveyors in terms of like the general public's consciousness of the pre-assist. He would play the pass that would break the lines, and then someone would square it for the striker to finish. Remember, there was a game where they ran right against Newcastle, I think in a later season, where I think he was brilliant, but he didn't have an assist to his name because he was breaking the line so easily with his passes, and someone was just like laying in the middle. So
the key passes kind of stat or that kind of area was pioneered by him, maybe.
Maybe this is, I suppose this is my affection to this game, because I think it's the moment I realised how you could. I was a really bitter United fan, which is stupid considering the success, but I'd always see...
What are you like now, then?
Oh, you don't want to know. but I would almost kind of, every time Arsenal would do well, or specifically players like Henri would do well, I think it's always something against us. Yeah. And now I look back at it, I think I just wasted my childhood at being what a magnificent player to actually enjoy in his time. I find myself now, you know, when you go back to YouTube clips and you're like, actually, I was alive for this. Why didn't I watch this with the same kind of frame of mind? What a waste.
There's one final thing on Xabi Alonso. It tells you everything you need to know about him, that Guardiola took him to Bayern. Yeah, his intelligence, his ability to kind of fit into... Yeah.
Lovely little swan song, wasn't it?
In retrospect, he was one of the great players of between, say, a couple of years before this and a decade later.
Yeah, all agreed. So, back to the game itself, of course, Liverpool 1-0 up, and that was a score at half-time, then into the second half. And this is my sort of frustration with Arsenal, and it's still the case now, is... They offered so little sort of going forward, really. They hardly had a shot on goal, blah, 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 blah. It's all the same problems that persisted through those years at Wenger. The difference was with this side is they had players like Vieira, Henri and so on and so forth, because the goal they score in that game is utterly glorious.
Oh, it's a brilliant goal.
It is utterly glorious. The deft touches, they dance around that Liverpool side, and then the finish from Vieira itself, where he dinks it over the advancing Kirkland, and you think to yourself, could Carragher have that off the line? But the weight of the finish is just right, and you think, well, when they can, they're capable of doing that. Where has that been all game? And then for the rest of the game, you see nothing of that. For a side that can produce such brilliance, you think, well, where on earth was that? And that's the difference between that team and the subsequent Wenger side.
Well, it's Vieira, isn't it? Vieira had that ability to surge forward and the technical skill to finish like that. To be involved in the build-up and then get in the box as well. Mm. Who have they had who really has that sort of drive since Vieira? And I think, you know, you then start to wonder, well, how great was Wenger? Was it just that he happened to... I mean, of course he signed Vieira, or at least advised selling Vieira before he got to the club. But was he as great a genius as we thought he was, or was it just that he had Vieira who did that? And I don't know the answer to that. And maybe part of his genius is just to let him do it. I don't know.
Yeah, perhaps. Well, but going very briefly back to that article that Kevin McCarroll wrote, it's interesting that he said this. Bear in mind, this is 2004, a season after the Invincibles. When he's talking about that goal, he said, that was no more than a flashback to the Arsenal of old. He's already referring to them as the
Arsenal
really of old.
That's really interesting, yeah. It's only two defeats after the...
Yep.
And he already can see it's over.
Yeah. Isn't that fascinating?
Yeah.
You know. So that was the equalising goal, but as we say, Vish, apart from that moment of sublime brilliance from that side, it was really all they offered.
Yeah.
Yeah, go on, you were going to say.
Sorry, it was the first time that they kind of remembered who they were.
Like, yeah.
My Arsenal supporting mate, who's a massive basketball fan, likened it to... a college basketball move. He basically said, if you want to get into basketball, don't watch the NBA, watch college basketball. Because what happens is teams get into position, they get set, and then they do a move. So you can actually see the things working out. So if you want to get into it, that's the best form to watch. And he likened that specific Vieira goal to college basketball, because you can almost see it. They get the ball, or Vieira gets the ball from fairly deep, and he's like, right now.
Yeah.
You know, plays it into Henri, makes his run. Henri goes to Pires, and you know, Vieira just runs over the ball, basically. Pires plays it perfectly into his path, and the dink. And it was the first time they kind of looked at it and thought, oh, yeah, no, this is how we do it. Yeah. This is what we did all of last year. And it was, you know, Vieira is always a fascinating player because, again, you know, because of my immature ways as a kid, I would, you know, it was always him against Keane. And one of the underrated things about Vieira is that he scored goals, similarly to the way that Keane's passing was quite underrated as well.
And Vieira scored a lot of different types of goals.
Well, yeah, exactly. He'd often be the guy at the end of the counter-attack who would put that finishing touch. There's a great goal he scored at White Hart Lane, I think it was, where...
Oh, yeah.
Kind of, you know, stretches those long legs and gets on the end of a whipped ball in. And yeah, so I suppose he maybe in a different side, had Wenger not signed him, if he'd gone somewhere else, he might have played a different role. But and maybe kind of bumped up his goal tally. But yeah.
Well, I think Vieira is a great example of how your box to box midfield is essentially dying out. Mm. And Gerrard, we mentioned earlier how he had to be sort of redeployed because that sort of play just doesn't exist.
Because of formation changes.
And also, just, I think the game's been so intense that it's very, very difficult for players to get up and down constantly for 90 minutes. And so you put them either in the defensive band or the attacking band in midfield.
Yeah.
But I think Vieira's career is what's the word I'm looking for? It sort of shows Paul Pogba what he ought to be.
Yeah.
Right.
But Pogba is sort of a modern, you know, box-to-box player. He's got everything. You know, he's got all the technical ability. He's got all the physical ability. Yeah. And yet somehow he doesn't quite fit into modern football.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
And Vieira could have had exactly the same problem, but was tactically smart enough to work out a way of doing it where he fundamentally sat quite deep. Mm-hmm. But as you say, he was very, very good at getting the end of counter-attacks as well, so he could use the...
His reading of the game was superb.
The more sort of deft aspects of his technique. Mm-hmm. And it's a player you just sort of think Pogba could be that, but for some reason isn't. And maybe you know, the fact they're both French are making the comparison.
Sure.
But you sort of see that the structure of the France national team now is not that far removed from how it was 15 years ago. That seems not to have changed. Deschamps obviously was playing in that with Vieira, and now managing Pogba, and the way the football is played is quite similar. So you sort of think, why can't Pogba do what Vieira did? Because he appears to have all the same attributes, and yet something isn't quite there.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean.
On the on Vieira, there was one of the overriding things I do like about this game is because it was very Premier League. It was, you know, Sunday. It was under lights.
That was a super Sunday.
It was super Sunday. Yeah, but the commentaries here of Martin Tyler and Andy Gray. Obviously, the less said about Andy Gray now, the better. But,
Then,
Marcus. Yeah, I just heard a story about Andy Gray earlier today that's made me reassess his entire career. And
is it one for sure?
I mean, no, it'd be incredibly self-indulgent because it's just him slagging me off when I wasn't there. Key thing is, he knew who I was.
Well, that's important. Yeah. Yeah.
Who's working the British media now, Andy?
Hey, who's in Football Ramble Daily now, Andy?
Yeah, okay, there you go.
And that's the real quiz. Vish, please carry on.
Our podcast's getting harder to make, Marcus.
You know what? You'd take yourself to the next level if you do that thing that he used to do, where he used to like go into a player's head.
Oh yeah,
you know, I'm going to get it on the end of this.
Do you know what, Vish? I will take a moment actually, because I watched, you know, when on Sky Sports they replay all the old seasons and all that kind of stuff, and it was Newcastle. I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen, but I am going to. It was Newcastle versus Leicester at St James's Park. Kenny Dalglish was in charge. Leicester were 3-1 up, and then Shearer scores a hat trick, and Newcastle win 4-3. And on that note of Andy Gray, Shearer gets the last goal, and. What the Gray's commentary as the ball's going in, he goes, Alan Shearer, he goes something a bit like, you know, and the ball goes in and he goes, go on, Alan, win us the game, Alan, get your hat trick, Alan, make Kenny happy, Alan. And I just remember thinking, Gordon Bennett, it is bliss to live in the modern day. It is bliss to be in 2019, and I can't hear that anymore. Yeah, I'm sorry, everybody.
Well, this is another Andy Gray cracker from this particular game, where Tinamar Pongol does a brilliant turn. He's kind of running away from goal to his left, and then jinks to his right and takes out two players, and one of those players is Vieira. And, you know, Martin Tyler and Andy Gray are kind of like chuckling about it, and the crowd go up, you know, when a player does that bit of skill. And Andy Gray goes, it's a brilliant line.
I know exactly what you're going to say, yeah.
I don't think Patrick Vieira should get back on until he buys another ticket.
Because he's just gone flying past off the pitch. Oh,
dearie me.
Outstanding.
Oh, dear. Well, of course, there wouldn't be another goal until right at the death of the match. So the game goes on. And like I say, I've laboured the point that Liverpool looked like the only side that were going to win it for my money, certainly. And then it came from well, I said unlikely source. I mean, Mellor was playing up front.
No, it's a really unlikely source in that it's just a long punt from Chris Kirkland,
yeah.
And Sol Campbell and
they get caught up.
Get completely, yeah, but to start with, they let the ball bounce, which Andy Gray is not happy about. It sort of goes over Vieira. I don't know if Vieira's just sort of misread it, but it goes over Vieira. Maybe he just sort of thinks that Campbell's going to clear it up.
Mm-hmm.
But Campbell and Tyr end up running into each other, and they also smash Gerrard. He's left on the ground.
Yeah. I think it's Kewell, isn't it? It hits Kewell in the face.
Is it Kewell?
I think it's the best, apart from that knockdown.
To be fair,
if
a player's getting
goal.
Injured, it's probably going
to
be
I was going to say, yeah. But to be fair to Campbell and Toure, if it was Kewell who's knocked to the ground and the ball drops to Mellor all those yards out, they probably think, well, the danger's done. The danger's over with, you know.
But yeah, 30 yards out, and he smacks it with the outside of his right
foot. It's a beauty. It's an just absolute beauty.
Yeah, I mean, I was in the press box, and it's one of those where the angle was perfect.
Yeah,
saw as he struck it, that's going in.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's a stunning goal at the Kop in injury time to win the game, and it's one of those things that a commentator may say, oh, he might never score a better one in his life. And
10 days later,
yeah, exactly. but you know, whatever happened to the career of David Mellor? Obviously, didn't reach the highs that he would have wanted to after that.
David Mellor's career went downhill.
Yeah,
Neil Mellor.
And Neil Mellor. Sorry, Gordon Bennett. Oh, dearie me. Forgive me, everybody, getting too excited. But yes, Neil Mellor. Well, whatever sort of may happen with his career, blah 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 blah. It's a phenomenal moment.
Well, what a 10 days as well. Because 10 days later, he does exactly the same against Olympiakos, which is the second goal. So
yes.
Liverpool have to win by two.
Mm.
That, and Mellor scores to make it 2-1. Gerrard then scores a
great goal.
Classic Gerrard goal to make it 3-1. But I was at that game as well, and I remember when Mellor scored. Yeah, obviously my match report is in tatters because I've been writing this piece about disappointing Liverpool go out. I'm sort of pushing my laptop away and thinking I'm just going to watch this last 10 minutes and enjoy this because I think they're going to do it.
And he had to quickly rewrite the old.
Well, I had to rewrite this day as well. Liverpool, a nightmare for that.
Oh, really?
You really should have seen my first report from Milan. It was against Milan, for Istanbul. That was golden report I've never saw the light of day.
Do you still have it?
No, I deleted it.
Ugh.
Wasn't it the most spectacular one? Were you at that Africa Cup of Nations game?
Was I at the Africa? Yes, I know exactly what you're going to talk about.
The 4-4.
You've got to bear in mind, I'm the only British print journalist in Angola.
Yep.
There's been a terrorist attack 3 days earlier.
Up
in Cabinda in the exclave.
That's right.
So I'd spent 3 days sat at the airport trying to get on a flight to Cabinda to try and find out what was going on.
Mm.
I'd been spewing out. I'd been on Lorraine Kelly's show.
What?
I got so many media calls. Lorraine Kelly interviewed me about that.
Blimey. You mean the actress Lorraine?
The character Lorraine Kelly played by the broadcaster Lorraine Kelly.
Gotcha.
Right.
Interviewed me about it, yeah.
Blimey.
And so this whole day has drifted off. Anyway, CNN rang me up shortly after that and asked me to go on.
Uh-huh.
And I said, what's the fee? And CNN never pay. And I was like, hang on, I'm a freelance. I've paid to be out here. Everybody else is paying me. You can't just expect me to be, to do journalism for free for you. It wouldn't be fair on Lorraine Kelly. And of course, they had no idea who Lorraine Kelly was.
Think of Lorraine Kelly.
So I was exhausted from this. I'd written sort of 20 pieces in 2 days on a terror attack, which is not my
of course, I'm out of my
comfort zone in every sense.
Sure.
And then we go to this opening game.
Marley?
Angola v Marley. Yeah. So there's the opening ceremony. I'm able to kind of fill in I was doing five runners. So five match reports have to be filed on the whistle because there's a game nobody's cared about until the terror attack. So I'm able to sort of block it out with the opening ceremony and the president's address and everything. And then the game starts and you sort of think, oh, this is fine. It's 4-0 after 76 minutes. So you kind of written this,
easy peasy.
Yeah, at least that's gone right. A late goal from Seydou Keita could not disguise the dominance of the host. Two late goals from Seydou Keita.
Yeah.
And then the third goes, oh, Jesus Christ, 7 minutes of injury time and that Flavio, long blonde-haired idiot in goal of Angola just chucks one in. Jesus Christ.
And the game ended 4-4. But what a match report, though, Vish. You should read that one. I recommend that any time. But yes, I think we've reached the end. We probably reached the end about 5 minutes ago, for more honest, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, they've got a bonus Angola v Mali as well.
A little Wilson in Africa story. But yes, Vish.
Just on the Mela thing, you know, we talked about how unfortunate he's been since then. But even at the time, he kind of understood that he wasn't really going to make it for Liverpool, because I think he'd been on loan the season before. And he had his family there with him to watch the game, because he knew he was going to start. And before the free kick that leads to the chance that he scores, the Arsenal defending a corner and kind of sensing his moment, he goes up to Sol Campbell and asks for his shirt.
Really?
Really? I didn't know that.
Because he doesn't, obviously he just thinks, well, God, I'm playing against Arsenal here. Yeah. And thinks he's going to peter out to a draw. And obviously, in the bedlam of what happens afterward, he forgets to get Sol Campbell's shirt. But yeah, like, you know, we talk about players and, or people talk about, you know, what players want and what they remember, and everyone talks about medals. And if you can't have medals, at least have moments. Yeah. And I suppose that season was when Neil Mellor picked up his moments.
And he was a key part of the Champions League win.
Yeah, exactly,
the goal against Olympiakos was essential. Yeah. So, yeah.
Marvellous stuff. Dreams can come true, ladies and gentlemen. There we are. Thank you very much, Vish. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. Thank you, Jonathan, as well. Thank you, everybody. That was Greatest Games on Football Ramble Daily in association with The Blizzard. See you next week.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces 3 thought-provoking questions over 3 glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.